For my second graders last year, I was literally their first full year experience for most of them because some of them did not go to preschool. And in kindergarten, everything shut down. So for a lot of these kiddos, they had not really had the opportunity to be taught all of those foundational reading skills to be able to come into second grade as strong readers. Because once we come to second grade, we should already be reading.
Welcome to Teachers in America, a production of HMH, where we celebrate teachers and recognize their triumphs, challenges, sacrifices, and dedication to students. I'm the Senior Director of Community Engagement, Noelle Morris. Each episode, I meet a new teacher friend to learn about the latest lessons and innovations from the classroom. We focus each conversation on a specific instructional practice or theme, but always include their teacher journey. Today, we're joined by Amber Reyes, a first grade teacher from Denver, Colorado, who I had the pleasure to meet last year and now had the chance to sit in her classroom and witness how she teaches her students how to read, all while building a sense of community. In her 17-year education career, Amber has gone from phonics tutor to early childhood educator to elementary school teacher. Along the way, she's learned to draw from her background in early childhood education, or ECE, and phonics training to create an engaging classroom where students purposely learn, even through play. Amber strives to build strong relationships in and outside the classroom. She also serves as an HMH contributor, helping other educators online. In this episode, Amber will share strategies on how to nurture the whole child through social emotional learning and phonics. Now, let's get to the episode.
So, Amber, thank you so much for being a guest on Teachers in America. We're so glad for you to be here, and I know that our listeners are going to love hearing from you. I always like to start with this question, and I want to ask you to describe your teacher journey in three words.
Well, thank you. I'm so excited to be here as well. Three words to describe my teaching journey, I would say, are inevitable, awakening, and purposeful.
Why inevitable? I'm curious about that. It's almost as if you knew you were going to be a teacher, like the moment you started school, or if even not before.
As a child, I loved school. I spent a lot of time at school, before school and after school, since my mom was working. I saw how hard teachers worked, and I constantly told myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I am not going to teach. I'm not going to teach. But even after going through undergrad, avoiding education, I still ended up inevitably becoming a teacher, and I know it was meant to be. And I think I've known my whole life. I think I just tried to ignore the calling, but inevitably, here I am.
How do you set up your classroom to give every child a sense of their purpose? Because I love that that was one of your words, purposeful. And even at the youngest of grades, I mean, you're teaching in first grade, so they're still early learners, to know and find their purpose. How do you set that up to establish every child seeing they have equal opportunity to learn, grow, and be themselves?
I think the first step is relationship. I make sure to establish really strong relationships with my kiddos so that way they trust me and they know that I love them and they know that, like, I come here for them. They are my purpose. Just this morning during our share, we had to share our purpose for coming to school today. And, you know, of course, my purpose is always, I'm here for you. I make sure that they know that. And the next thing is to really kind of build their confidence to A, be able to make mistakes, and B, to kind of take those risks. As they develop confidence, they're going to start to develop a sense of really what they want and what they need, and they're going to be more comfortable with expressing it and making sure they get it. When I think about some of the comments this morning, one of my kiddos said, my purpose is to read better because I struggle with reading. And I was just like, what? Like, it was amazing. And another kiddo's purpose was, I come here to play with a very specific friend. And so I love that they're confident enough to share that. And they're also able to articulate it. I mean, we are very specific in the social emotional vocabulary we teach them, especially with my background in ECE. I bring a lot of that here. And so making sure that they can find that purpose, express that purpose, and start working towards that purpose, you know, they all are loved. They know that. And they all do have a purpose. And like each of us has a different purpose. And even with our jobs, we all have a different purpose. Sometimes we're on vacation. Sometimes we have a job. And that makes them comfortable with knowing like, hey, you do have a purpose. Like, I need you to come to school tomorrow because goodness, you are my door holder. And if you're not here, what am I going to do without you? You know? And so them just feeling wanted and needed, I think, is really important because we all have that need to be wanted and needed.
And what a life skill, right? Because even at the youngest age, you have to learn you cannot do everything. You need people. You need connections. So just so the audience and our listeners know, I got to watch Amber in action today. So some of my questions are definitely because I was in the experience and was getting a chance to see. You know, it's just an interesting concept that they know first grade is where you become a reader. So how do you help them stay calm in that we all develop? I heard you talk specifically because a student was saying something and missed a letter and mispronounced something. And you said, no, wait a minute, friends. You know, we all develop differently.
I think the big thing is that we focus is that we all develop differently, both in academics, but also emotionally as well. And I try to create a community where kids are not feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't do that. More so a community where, like, if I don't know how to, I know I can get help. Like a lot of times at small group, they're encouraged to help cue each other. Like, oh, check your vowel. Oh, check your consonant. And, you know, it just becomes a normal thing. Like, oh, I'm helping you learn how to read. But guess what? Later, you're going to help me when I'm having a problem. One of our classroom jobs is a problem solver. And so sometimes when kids are having a problem, somebody else steps in. It's really a natural part of our classroom at this time to accept where we are, that self-love. Like once we learn to love ourselves and accept where we are, it doesn't really matter where we are because we know we're not going to stay. And we know that we have help going wherever we want because we have friends, we have teachers, we have family, and we actually use our mindsets for learning a lot. And so sometimes during shout out time, somebody might say, oh, I'm giving so-and-so a shout out because they persisted when they were trying to read a word, you know? And so really tying our mindsets for learning, which are really lifelong mindsets, really helps them to be okay with not knowing it yet. Nobody is comfortable with not knowing, but once we normalize that and teach them, like it's an okay place to be, it becomes comfortable and it doesn't really matter to them that, oh, I can't read that word because guess what? I know I have the skills to learn how to.
I love that. And I'm giggling because they can say, oh, I want to give a shout out for my friend persisting. Tell us a little bit about knowing that you really love to teach phonics and phonological awareness. Where did that come from? And when did you decide that you were really going to focus in on that?
So I have worked in education in various formats historically. One of the jobs I had was actually specifically a phonics tutor. I received extensive training on how to teach kiddos who are significantly behind in reading how to teach them to become readers. And so that was really kind of new to me because I remember a little bit of phonics in elementary school, but not a lot. Like I remember sometimes we would be talking about letter sounds, but at that point, I'm pretty sure it was more of like a whole language learning. So for me, I really had to work hard to kind of unlearn things that I had thought about teaching kiddos to read. And kind of like learn this new code, like, and I call it code because it really is like a code. It's the code to reading. And so I went to this very intense camp where we broke down phonics and phonological awareness. And then we had to go and tutor kiddos. And it was very, very like fast paced. Like we had a lot to do. It was fast paced and very routine, very much like the foundational skills portion of into reading. So after I had become this tutor, and I was very young, I was early 20s, when I had got this training, which I had never heard about, a lot of phonics and phonological awareness, after I did that tutoring, I ended up teaching preschool. And so right away when I was teaching preschool, I decided, okay, well, we are going to make sure these kiddos leave here knowing their letters and their sounds. And that was really big at the preschool I was teaching at Maddox ECE, and they really had kind of all these pre-reading skills that kiddos need to have. And on there was phonics and phonological awareness. So at that point, I decided I'm going to make this fun. I'm going to integrate this into play. I'm going to integrate it into transitions. And I'm going to make sure that it is familiar and it's easy, that it doesn't seem like, oh, this is hard work. This is just something I know how to do because it's a game. It's something that's familiar with because I know how to manipulate sounds in my names. So just really making it fun and easy for the kids to do it without feeling like it was this whole new overwhelming thing to learn.
Hey, teacher friends. If you're an HMH user, did you know you have access to Teacher's Corner on Ed? Included with every HMH program, Teacher's Corner is a community of teachers, learning experts, and coaches gathered in one place to support you with a new kind of professional learning. Bite-sized, teacher-selected, and teacher-driven. With on-demand sessions, lesson demonstrations, program support, and practical resources, Teacher's Corner lets you choose how you interact with our content. I like to think about it as inspiration on demand.
Transitioning from early childhood, what did all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to go and become an elementary school instead of staying at the earliest grades?
So when I was teaching at ECE, it was an amazing program. I am so thankful for my time there. It has helped me turn into the teacher I am. While I was there, the principal, Lee, actually fought to get a pay increase for the ECE teachers. ECE teachers are significantly underpaid compared to any other teacher. And the only catch was you had to be licensed. I had been teaching unlicensed because I studied behavioral science and psychology. Again, I was trying to avoid education. And once we found out, like, if we got a license, we would be making a wage comparable to the elementary teachers in our district. So I decided, all right, I'm going to get my license. But not only did I get my license for ECE, the program also offered it for elementary and a master's degree. So it was like an all-in-one package. And so now I had a license. I was very comfortable where I was teaching. I loved the school. Phenomenal. Seeing amazing results, amazing families and kids. But I found out that they did not offer a lane change for a master's degree if you're teaching ECE. So at that point, I had to make a decision. If I was going to stay or if it was time for me to move on. And I really did feel like it was time for me to move on because there was this ongoing conversation at my preschool about how do we take what's happening here and bring it all the way up through third grade, because early childhood education is birth through third grade. And so I just kind of started looking around and Dow reached out to me. And after talking to Rob and Joe and expressing how I did want to bring ECE, you know, up into the upper grade levels, they seemed open to it. And so then I accepted a second grade position last year, and it has been wonderful. I love being here, and I actually love the challenge of changing grade levels. Like, I was comfortable for years where I was, but now I am growing even more as a teacher because I changed to second grade. Now I'm in first grade, and having to really look at the standards as I'm going up and back and forth has really helped me to understand where they're coming from and where they're going.
I know, because you and I met when you were teaching second grade.
Yes.
And but now you told me that you actually asked to go to first grade and that one of your goals now is to then hopefully in the next year go to kindergarten to have the whole experience.
Yeah, like bounce around. I'm open. I've told them I'm the flexible one on my sheet. I said I will bounce around anywhere. Put me anywhere, because I feel like teaching is the same, but what changes is the students, which changes year to year anyways, and the standards, you know, and I'm up for those kind of challenges. And I really do just love working with all kids.
So what did you notice with your second graders last year that you know is because it was their first year back completely after a pandemic?
The term I'm using is kind of like post-COVID trauma. COVID did cause a lot of trauma in a lot of our students and our families and in the teachers. And for my second graders last year, I was literally their first full year experience for most of them, because some of them did not go to preschool. And in kindergarten, everything shut down. So for a lot of these kiddos, they had not really had the opportunity to be taught all of those foundational reading skills to be able to come into second grade as strong readers. Because once we come to second grade, we should already be reading. But because of our, we're online, we're in person, back and forth. There was not really a solid foundation for them. But having that background in ECE and keeping in mind the continuum, because ECE was birth through third, I was very easily able to identify those gaps that they had. Oh, okay, we're not able to identify beginning sound or ending sound. What were our pre-skills? Oh, we don't have the ability to blend. Okay, so what are the pre-skills? And that was really helpful, because for some of these kids, I was teaching them multiple years worth of material. And that's true for, I think, all the second graders across the whole world. You know, like, we all did the best we could during virtual learning, but to be honest, the virtual learning cannot replicate what would happen in a classroom when you're, you know, face to face and you're sitting around a small group table or you're sitting on a carpet. And a lot of the challenging behaviors that I saw last year, I am still seeing this year, of course, because we didn't have that time to develop those social emotional skills. You learn so much more than academics in a classroom. You are learning how to engage with others, how to express yourself, how to understand your emotions. Having that ECE background, again, where the big focus is social emotional intelligence, that was really helpful for me. Like, I literally pulled out posters that I had in my ECE classroom and I started putting them up, you know. And I'm very fortunate to be here at Dow, because for Dow, like, it's really a whole child approach, and SEL is a mandatory part of our day. You have about 30 minutes dedicated for SEL lessons, and that has been very helpful and kind of helping kids to overcome the setbacks that COVID made happen.
And you'll have one rule here, right? Which is choose kindness.
Choose kindness. Yep. That's the only rule. And everything can, you know, fall under choose kindness. If it's not kind, we don't do it.
And that, I heard a student bring that into your into reading lesson today with your knowledge map. And you were asking them about nature. And then they're like, the birds sing. And that's so mm-hmm. sweet. And they're kind.
Yep.
And so you can see that
they
that
love
is
it.
Transferring.
Yep, it does. It just becomes like a way you think and a way of being.
So now tell us about your experience with Into Reading. I mean, that's how you and I met. We met in our teacher's corner from HMH's Facebook community. Tell us a little bit about how you came into using the curriculum and what was the first thing you noticed and why you said, okay, this is going to be a good fit for me.
So we got our curriculum, the boxes, just a few days before school started. And so, like, I remember the day the boxes arrived. We were all so excited because we had been eager. Apparently, they hadn't had a curriculum for quite some time. And Kyle Schwartz, who you're very familiar with now, came into my room while I was unpacking, and she was just glowing. She was, like, so excited. And for me, I'm like, it's just boxes to me. You know, it's just boxes. Like, I'm happy I have something so I know what I'm teaching with. Like, at that point, we were just getting it unpacked. And she was like actually going through things. And then she started sharing how she had actually piloted the program and compared it. And she was telling me everything she liked about it. At first, I was overwhelmed. I'm not going to deny, like, I didn't know where to start. It was so much stuff. But the first thing that caught my eye were the sound cards. Like, I pulled those out and I was like, oh my gosh, I love these. These are going up. And right away, I was like, okay, I'm putting these up on the board. And then I really right away started seeking the groups. Right away, I found Teacher's Corner, started looking through there, and started navigating Ed. I had just spent time going through Ed. And the more time I spent, the more time I was like, wow, there is so much to this. What I need to focus on right now is my whole group. And I was already kind of familiar with the My Books, because when I pulled the My Books out, I was so excited seeing that the kids can actually write in them. And so I was really excited about that, but I was even more excited too about the foundational slides once I found them. I was like, oh my gosh, everything's right here. I'm not going to have to be making things. It's right here on the board. I can click through. There's pictures. There's cueing. There's everything. And so I was really excited about those lesson slides. And like, once I realized that some kiddos, of course, were not getting it at whole group, I started looking more for a way to supplement to help those kiddos who are more tier three. And so I think I went to Teacher's Corner and I typed an intervention, and boom, I discovered, oh my gosh, Word Study Studio, it has an intervention piece. And so really just like searching, like finding out, oh my gosh, they have intervention. Oh my goodness, we have like online lessons for vocab and phonics that I can assign to them. And coming right off of COVID, this was last year, I was just amazed at how much was offered online, because in the back of my mind, I was constantly thinking, oh my gosh, when are we rolling remote? When are we rolling remote? I need to find out every digital component so that way I know what I'm going to do. I'm very much a planner. Like, I want to be a few steps ahead. And I discovered, like, wow, every book is online. It can be read to them, which is so important because books should be accessible. And some of my kiddos might not be readers yet, but them having the ability to have it read to them makes it so they can still access that text. And so I just kept diving deeper and deeper. And I still feel like there could be even more amazing things that I haven't found. The next thing that I found after the online piece was the SEL slides. I'm all about whole child. And when I was looking on the Ed platform under all resources, I saw social emotional. And I had noticed in the teacher's manual, there's a page specifically that talks about whole child approach. And so then I started using the SEL slides because I'm like, oh, this is one last thing for me to have to plan. Here, I have the slides and they're so interconnected to the reading module. It's just like fits so nicely together. And then after that, I discovered the inquiry projects, which I love the inquiry projects. And then it was the blending board. And so really, like, I just feel like it was just like, it just kept building like an avalanche.
I'm curious, now that you've taught two grades, every teacher has a place in the scope and sequence that you're not dreading it, but you know it's going to be the most challenging skill or set of skills coming. Do you mind sharing what yours are?
I don't know, honestly, that I have one that I'm nervous about. I think I'm more excited because my kiddos want to learn more. And so for the first grade scope and sequence, there's not necessarily, I would say, one at this point that I'm worried about. I will tell you one part that does worry me constantly is our suffixes, our prefixes and our suffixes. Like, those are the ones, and those happen, you know, throughout it. So whenever those come up, those are the ones that I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how are we going to make sure we have these prefixes and suffixes, you know, in addition to everything we're doing. So those are kind of like my, ooh.
That was mine too. And the more I've gotten into working directly with teachers using Into Reading, because I come from Read 180, which also had explicit instruction in it. But I've become so fond of the generative vocabulary because I think it would have soothed my fears of, am I teaching this clearly enough? Or is it just enough? I'm not over teaching. I'm teaching just enough. So
yeah, I love the interactive generative vocabulary. Like, it really helps me to be able to go back and see like who's got it. And I love that it has the read to me option, because some of my kiddos can't read. But guess what? They are understanding, oh, if I add full or, you know, color full, they're able to figure that out, which is going to help them even more when they do become readers, but also to really understanding what they're reading. So I'm so thankful for the generative vocabulary.
And today I saw one of your students reading along with the Start Right reader, Pete the Duck.
Yes, Pete the Duck.
And I mean, he was silently reading. He was following the highlighting. I'm curious, is he also on, I know you use Amira. Is he also using Amira? Because I'm wondering if some of that skill is transferring.
Yes. All of them do Amira as well. It's a daily requirement and they are all really good at it, and they are better at following along now as well. And I love the Start Right reader being available on the online platform again because of accessibility reasons. And two, the kids can read it at home. So like, some of the kids have logins, so they can log in at home and they could read Pete the Duck to their family again.
Oh, so sweet. So what growth have you noticed? What are you noticing now? What is comparable to last year? And what are you anticipating at the end of this year because of the way you're progress monitoring? I know that's a lot, but I want to kind of dissect growth and not just lump, you know, my students are doing well. I think teachers, we love to talk about the specifics.
Mm-hmm. When I think of the beginning of the year last year versus this year, seeing my second graders come in not having letters, sounds, phonological awareness, But knowing that we put so much work in, those kids worked so hard. Kyle and I teamed very well to help them pretty much, like, for some of them, they had like 2.5 years worth of growth in 9 months. Knowing that they grew that much in second grade, seeing where my first graders are now, how they do have less gaps, like, I constantly go to think, like, where are they going to be in the future? You know, like, when they leave first grade and they go into second grade, I am just happy that they will have more of those skills. Like, they're more aware of the code to read. Like, they understand what it means to decode a word. And I think that is really powerful because our second graders didn't really have any exposure to science of reading. They had no idea that when you're reading, you're decoding something, you know, and these kids know that they have the academic language. And seeing their growth on the early literacy assessments and the module assessments, we do an end of module assessment too at the end of each module, seeing how they're confident with taking those tests and that they know where they are as a reader, which is important. For my second graders last year at the beginning, they knew they couldn't read. So guess what? They didn't want to read. They didn't want any part of it. Hands off. We're done. You know, but by the end of the year, the way that they push themselves during their assessments, the way they push themselves to demonstrate their knowledge, the way they were setting goals and meeting those goals was so amazing. And I'm seeing that now with my first graders as well. Since we're younger, it's taken some time to get to. You know, we have to be careful with the way we talk about assessments with kiddos because we are more than a test. We just do our best. That's what I always tell my kids. But I also want them to understand the importance of it.
You're more than a, what was it?
You're more than a test. Just do your best. Yeah. Like, so like I just, because we actually meet about our tests. We usually have pre-meetings and post-meetings. We talk about what was our goal? Did we make it? And we actually talk about, like, if we didn't make our goal, what do we need to do to meet it? But I'm excited to see where these first graders will be, knowing that they will have had a full year of instruction on those key foundational skills that is aligned to science of reading. Like, second grade is going to be a lot more manageable.
Well, I know I've appreciated this time, and you've given such great advice, and you're always just so calm. I just appreciate that, because even when we talk sometimes and I'm like, I don't want, let's do da, 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 da. And you're just like, okay, now process, what's the priority? I just appreciate that about you. And I can see that your team and your students definitely appreciate that too. So ask everybody on the podcast, what's your walk-up song? And it's because I just believe that every teacher needs to be seen. And if you're not, then bring that bravado out with a great playlist and bring your swag to the classroom. So I'm curious, Amber, what is your walk-up song?
That is so hard to pick because I actually have a morning pump-up playlist.
See? We are kindred spirits here.
Yeah, okay. I'm like picking one. I think the one I would pick, if I had to only pick one, which I have a whole list, it would probably be, it's actually a British group. It's Seize the Power by Yonaka. Because it really, that song is really about realizing the power inside of you and waking up to it and just bringing it. Sometimes we just have so much in our head that we don't realize we do have so much power in us. And that song is very much just like, I woke up, I got it. I've got the power and I'm going to do this. Sometimes we got to break rules to do it. Sometimes we got to be different, but we're going to do it.
So I love it. That's my song. Inevitable and definitely purposeful. Yes. So Amber, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Teachers in America podcast, please email us at shaped@hmhco.com. Be the first to hear new episodes of Teachers in America by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoy today's show, please rate, review, and share it with your network. You can find the transcript of this episode on our SHAPE blog by visiting hmhco.com/SHAPE. The link is in the show notes. The Teachers in America podcast is a production of HMH. Executive producers are Christine Condon and Tim Lee. Editorial direction is by Christine Condon. It is creatively directed and audio engineered by Tim Lee. Our producer and editor is Jennifer Carujo. Production designers are Mia Fry and Thomas Velasquez. Shape blog post editors for the podcast are Christine Condon, Jennifer Carujo, and Alicia Ivory. Thanks again for listening.